morning, everyone. It is truly an honor to welcome Abby Johnson to Cleveland. Abby, as many of us know, was a former Planned Parenthood director, and in her best-selling book, Unplanned, which you all need to get your hands on out there, Abby does tell about her conversion from being a pro-choice advocate to being a pro-life supporter. Abby gives much of her credit for her conversion to 40 Days for Life and all the love that they showed her when she did come out and join them. We know that Planned Parenthood tried to silence Abby for quite a while with a court order to stop her from discussing the work that was going on in the abortion industry. This action has pushed Abby right into the limelight and now is one of our most powerful advocates for the truth of what goes on behind these walls. Please join us tonight. Abby has offered to host a reception, and all the proceeds for the reception tonight from 5 to 6 here will go back to our local 40 Days for Life campaign. So without further ado, Abby Johnson.
Hey, that was pretty funny. Somebody at the table said, I think you were one of the first ones in the room. I'm like, I was over there quietly eating my breakfast. Okay, well, it's good to be here with you this morning. I'm from Texas, so I guess I should give you the big howdy.
Howdy.
Okay, that's not very good. Howdy.
Howdy.
Very good. It's a good time to be pro-life, so we should be very excited to be here today. And, you know, a lot of good things happening in the country, in the pro-life movement. We have the biggest 40 Days for Life campaign ever, which is exciting. That means that we have the most campaigns ever, people praying and fasting and reaching out to abortion vulnerable women outside of the clinics than ever before. That's amazing. And you know what that means? That means that we're going to have probably, God willing, the most saves from abortion. We're going to have women turning around and choosing life. And of course they're going to be choosing life, right? Of course they're going to be turning away from sin. Of course they're going to be turning away from evil. Of course they're going to be running to Christ and running to the truth and running into our arms, right? That makes sense. Of course they're going to be doing that. We should be expecting that. We need to have a plan ready for them. We need to be ready with open arms because, of course, they are going to be turning away from the sin of abortion. Of course they are. We have the most pro-life youth ever. I mean, the majority of the youth in this country are pro-life. Did any of you go to the March for Life? Did you see how many youth were there? It's amazing. It's so encouraging. And I'm only 30, so I'll consider myself still youth. I'm youthful. You look around and there's all these girls wearing, you know, what did Life News say? All these girls wearing UGG boots, right? And the boys are wearing these hoodies. And that's the pro-life movement. That's the movement now. I believe abortion will end in this country, and I believe it will end because of the young generation that's coming up. They are on fire for life, and of course they are, because being pro-life makes sense to them. I mean, they look at an ultrasound and they see a baby and they say, that's a baby. My 4-year-old looks at an ultrasound of a 14-week-old kid in the womb and she says, there's a baby. I mean, duh. Right? And that's what the youth in this country are thinking. Of course they're pro-life. And you know, I got to be honest. I was looking at this picture the other day. I busted out laughing when I saw it. It was Cecile Richards, the president of PPFA, and Jane Fonda, and I think Barbara Streisand, okay? It was the three of them in their hot pink shirts. And they were standing there, you know, arm in arm. And I busted out laughing when I saw it. I said, well, there's the pro-life, the pro-choice movement. right? A bunch of women who can't even reproduce anymore. There they are. The pro-choice movement is literally dying off. And I don't mean that in an ugly way. I mean that in a very serious way. When the pro-choice movement, when they were young, you know, and they were growing up, and they were like, I'm a woman, and I'm going to burn my bra. And they were growing up, and they were, you know, getting older. They were utilizing their choice. They weren't having children. And these beautiful pro-life families, they were being fruitful and multiplying, right? And they were raising pro-life children. And now these children are raising their own pro-life children. And so now we have this huge generation of pro-life people. It makes sense. In fact, the president of NARAL came out with a press release saying that she had gone to the March for Life and that she is very, very nervous. She is nervous because she went to the March for Life and she looked out and she said, where are the pro-choice youth in this country? They're not here. Nobody's here. The people in the pink shirts that go out to protest, there was like 50. Where are they? There's no more pro-choice youth in this country. They're dwindling away. Well, my message to the president of NARAL, my message to Cecile Richards, my message to the CEOs of Planned Parenthood around this country is, yeah, you better be scared. We are taking over. We are taking over. And the youth of this country, they will end abortion. Father Frank was right when he said last night, for those of you that were here, he said, you know, the youth are different. They look at things and they say, oh, well, there's an abortion clinic there. Why aren't we there? Oh, this is a pro-choice candidate. Well, why aren't we letting everybody know? They're very direct. They're very focused. We need to embrace that. We need to let them lead. So many times we look at, you know, I remember being a kid and they said, well, you're not old enough to do that. You're too young to do that. Well, I'm here to tell every single youth that's in this room, you are not too young to be a leader in this movement. Amen. You know, I'm probably the worst breakfast speaker ever. Because my story is graphic, and everything I have to say is graphic. And so I've been trying to think. All last night I was like racking my brain. What am I going to say that's not going to, you know, just be disgusting after breakfast? And so I've been trying, you know, to think about this, and I didn't want to, you know, put a downer at 8:30 and be a downer at 8:30 in the morning. So I've been trying to think about it, and I think I've come up with something that won't make you sick at your stomach this morning. I don't mind if it's 8 o'clock at night, but I want to be on your good graces at 9 o'clock in the morning. Okay. Are we having Catholics in here? Okay. Any non-Catholics? Yay! Represent! Yay! Yeah! Okay. Okay, good for you. I'm not officially a Catholic yet. My husband and I are coming into the church. I thought some of you would like that. Anyway, when I was choosing my confirmation saint, I didn't know who to choose. It was very difficult for me. I put it on my Facebook, you know, trying to get suggestions.
I was really desperate. Okay. I was like talking to my priest about it. You know, who do I pick? I don't know. And I was very perplexed. And ever since I was a child, I was raised Southern Baptist, and my parents are still Southern Baptist. And my mom, you know, in the beginning, she was kind of like, oh, Catholic, really? And but I think deep down she doesn't even care as long as I'm not at Planned Parenthood. Okay? She's like, I don't, whatever. Do whatever you want. So anyway, but my mom, she laughs now. She says, you know, Abby, I think you were born to be Catholic. Because when I was a child, I grew up in South Louisiana, where everybody's Catholic except for us. Okay, we were the only Southern Baptists, I think, and all my friends were Catholic. And my best friend Monique, she had a big family, of course, and we would drive in her van, and I would go, and I was her best friend. I'm an only child, and so we would drive in her van, and her mom, every time we'd pass a Catholic church, she had this beautiful statue of the Blessed Mother, and every time we would drive by, she would lean back to all of us, and she'd go, respect the mother. And, you know, and we'd all have to, even me, right? The Southern Baptist, everybody, you know, Abby, respect the mother. You know, and I'm like, I don't even know what that means, but okay. But when I was a child, I used to watch EWTN. And my mom, she's like, why? I don't know. Why are you watching this? And I used to watch Mother Angelica on EWTN. And I used to put a towel over my head. And I used to imitate Mother Angelica. I used to pretend that I was Mother Angelica. So my mom always says, you were born a Catholic. I mean, it's just, we're now embracing it, but it's just the way that it was. When I was growing up, I always ask about Mary. I would always say, Mom, I mean, when I was a little child, every Christmas, you know, why don't we talk about Mary? I mean, she just seems so important. Why don't we talk about her? And I would get the typical, you know, Southern Baptist answer, shh. And so it was always eating at me, you know. And as I got, you know, as I got older and I was in, you know, high school and everything, I would start to ask more and more questions. It made my parents more and more frustrated. And I went to our pastor about it. You know, why don't we talk about Mary? You know, well, she's just a normal woman who was chosen. And I'm like, she is not a normal woman. Are you kidding me? I mean, hello? What's going on with you? And it made me so aggravated. It made me so angry. I didn't get it. And so I went off to college, and we all know what happened there. And then we started going to an Episcopalian church. And, you know, and we had at the front of the Episcopalian church, I love the Episcopalian church because I love the liturgy. And so that was something I'd never experienced before. And so I love, love, love the liturgy. And my mom says, that's ritualistic. That's traditional. Well, I liked it. And so I used to go, I loved going to church and everything. And at the front of the church, we had these two statues. And one was a statue of Christ. And then one was a statue of St. Clair. I don't know why St. Clair, but anyway, for St. Clair was a big deal at the Episcopal church that we went to, and our chapel was St. Clair Chapel and all this. And when I used to go to church, I used to pretend that that was a statue of Mary. And, you know, I'd be like, no, that's Mary. You know, I used to pretend that, because I always felt like there was this missing connection, right? So I was like, the Episcopal church is almost perfect, except we don't talk about Mary. We still don't talk about Mary. And so then when we were booted out of the Episcopal church, and then we decided to become Catholic, all of a sudden, all of it fit together, right? And I could have the relationship with the Blessed Mother that I'd always been longing for apparently my whole life.
ever since I towed a towel around my head. And all of these things started making sense to me. Everything started falling into place. And it was thrilling for me, you know, for things to finally all fit together and work out. And so when it came time for my for me to pick a confirmation saint, I didn't know who to pick. And so I have this devotion to Mary. And I kept feeling like, you know, Mary, I thought, I'm not picking Mary. Right? I am not going to be like Planned Parenthood leader, and now I feel good enough to pick the big one. Okay? I'm not doing that. Okay? And so I was like, I'm not doing it. You know, and everybody kept giving me all these suggestions, you know, St. Gianna Mola and all these different, you know, oh, you should do this, you should do that, you know, and I was like, I'm just not feeling it, you know, and I kept feeling, oh, Mary, and I was like, I'm not doing it, God. And I told my priest, I guess I'm going to have to be confirmed without a confirmation saint, you know, because I'm not going to do it. And he said, well, you know, you can do that, you know. I said, but are you feeling like it? And I said, yeah, I'm not going to tell you who, though, because then you'll say I should do it, and I'm not going to do it. And so he said, okay. And he said, are you feeling like you should pick Mary? And I said, I am, but I'm not going to do it. And he was like, okay, but, you know, you just should. I mean, if that's what you're feeling, I said, well, I'm not. So I was being stubborn. And so I decided, you know, I'm just going to not have a confirmation saying, well, I started reading and I was, you know, kind of reading through these books and everything. And all of a sudden I came to a spot in this book when they were talking about, forgiveness in the Bible. And they started talking about Mary Magdalene. And I started crying, and I thought, that's the Mary, right? And I thought, okay, that's it. And so I just said, okay, I'll pick Mary, but a different one. And so I did. So Mary Magdalene is my confirmation saint. And it seemed perfect for me whenever I started reading and I started really, you know, thinking about her and everything, because she was offered so much forgiveness. And I have been offered so much forgiveness. And because of that forgiveness that she received, she clung so close to Christ. She was with him through every moment. Every moment of his death, when he was resurrected, she was there. It's amazing. It's amazing her dedication to him. Because she knew that he had offered her so much. And that's the story for all of us, right? He has offered forgiveness to all of us. And, you know, I wanted to tell you that because I wanted to also share. God, I hate crying. I also wanted to share about some people in my life who have offered similar forgiveness to me. And I think it's a good model of how we should be in this movement. Okay. Okay. Ooh, okay. For those of you that have read my book, you have read about Elizabeth McClung in my book. And Elizabeth worked at the Coalition for Life. And Brian, and she, in 2007, she was a student at A&M,
And she showed up in front of the clinic, and I remember thinking, you know, I don't know who this girl is, but I don't like her because she's too skinny. And and so she showed up, and I don't know who she is, but I, you know, as soon as I first went out there and she was out there, she immediately started talking to me. I mean, like immediately. And one thing that I really liked about having a powerful voice at the clinic was that I could shut any of them up. I mean, I was so intimidating to them, and I loved it. I mean, I loved it. I mean, I could just, they would talk to me, and I would just turn around and be like, I could say something to them, and they would never talk to me again. I loved it. I loved having that kind of power over the people at the fence. I hate to admit that now, but I really did. And nobody talked to me, except for this new little skinny girl outside of the clinic, Elizabeth. She talked to me constantly. She talked to me all the time. Every time I went out to my car, every time I went out, you know, to get lunch or something, there she was, you know, hey, Abby, how are you doing? You know, hope you have a good day, whatever. And she was genuine. You know, she wasn't fake. She wasn't like, hey, Abby, how are you doing? You know, hope you have a good day. You know, she was like, hey, Abby, like in my face, like right there at the fence. That was new to me. And I kind of liked it. I kind of liked that she wasn't backing down from me. I liked that. And so then I noticed that every day when I would get to work, there she was. And this girl's not going away. So every day I would get to work, there she was. I'd get out of my car. Hey, Abby, how are you doing? You know, and then the conversation would escalate every day. You know, hey, Abby, how are you doing? Hope you have a good day. Hey, Abby, how was your weekend? You know, let's go have coffee. You know, and it was just, and I just thought, okay, this girl's getting a little too close. Well, we started having some interactions, some more, you know, some deeper interaction out at the fence. And I decided I really like her. And I think if there wasn't this fence in between us, we would be friends. And I told people at the clinic that. I told my husband that. And I started Facebook stalking her. Right? That was before everybody's Facebook pages were private and everybody was so worried about what everybody was seeing. But anyway, I started Facebook stalking her, you know, and I was like, she's so cute and I like her and I like the little Facebook pages she was a part of and everything, you know, I thought it was funny. And I thought, she's really funny. I think we'd be really good friends. And so one day I showed up to work and there she was and she said, you know, Abby, I would really like to go to lunch or dinner with you. You know, if you ever want to go, just call me. You can call me at the Coalition. And I went in my office that day, and I saw her walk off, and I picked up the phone. And I almost called the number. I almost called and took her up on that offer, but I didn't. Because I thought, if anybody saw us out, that would be really bad. And I didn't. But I already knew that she had opened that door. There was already something developing between the two of us. And a couple days later, I showed up to work, and I'm driving in, and I see her standing there with this bouquet of flowers. And I thought, oh, my gosh, those better not be for me. And I pulled up to the clinic, and I'm thinking, okay, I'm not going to park by the fence because I don't even want to have a weird conversation about why she bought me flowers. So I'm just going to pull in as close to the back door as I can. I'm going to run in, and maybe she won't notice my bright red car that just pulled in the driveway. So I pulled in, and I pulled right up to the back door. I ran in as fast as I could, but I still heard her say, Abby, I brought you flowers, you know. And I'm like, oh, my gosh. And so I run into the back door. And I go in, I'm like looking, I sit down at my desk and I'm looking at her out the window and she's standing there like with her flowers looking all sad. And I just thought, oh my God, I felt so bad. I felt bad. You know, I thought, oh, I just totally dissed her out there, you know, all alone out there with her bouquet of flowers. And I felt bad. And so I thought, well, I can't go back out there. So
I just sat there watching her for a while, and I got back to work, and then I kept looking at, you know, I kept watching her or whatever. So finally, she was going to leave. But she was going to be dramatic about it. So she left, and she took the flowers. She walked right to the middle of the driveway, and she set them down right in the middle of the driveway. And then she looked back at the clinic, and then she walked off. But she knew I was watching her or something. And so she walked off, and I thought, oh, I can't leave those flowers out there in the middle of the road. That's rude. So I said, I'm going to go get the trash can, everybody. So I walked outside to get the trash can, and I just happened to grab the flowers on the way back in. And I put them in a vase, and they were very pretty. I put them in a vase, I put them in my office and everything, and there was a card attached to the flowers. And it was from Elizabeth, and it, you know, had a nice little note on it and everything. And I thought, okay, well, that's, you know, that's nice. And I knew she was genuine. I mean, she would tell me every day, I'm praying for you by name. You know, I went to church today, and I prayed for you by name for an hour. And I knew she was serious. I knew she really meant it. And that meant something to me. And so I knew that what she had written on the card was true. And for some reason, I didn't throw that card away. I kept that card. I don't know why, but I did. Now, fast forward 2 years, I'd already seen the ultrasound that had totally rocked my world. Life had already turned upside down for me, right? It's October 5th. And I'm sitting in my office, and I'm not knowing where to go. I'm not knowing what to do. I can't call my parents. My parents are on vacation. If I ever call my mom in a crisis, it just gives her bowel trouble for a week. So I can't call my mom with a crisis, you know. And most of my friends were pro-choice. They worked with me, or they worked in the movement, and so I couldn't call them. They would think I'm nuts. And so I thought, where am I going to go? You know, who am I going to turn to? And I had this little note stacker, you know, those little stacker note things, you know, you can put little files in them. I had that sitting on my desk. And I looked on it, and I saw just the very edge of that card that Elizabeth had given me 2 years ago, sticking out of there. And I pulled it out, and I looked at it, and I thought, okay, please give me somebody else, God. But okay, this is all I got. I guess that's where I'll go. And I still have the card. And I don't know why I kept that card. I don't know why I had that card for 2 years. I don't know why Elizabeth thought it was going to be a good idea to give a clinic director of an abortion clinic a bouquet of flowers. That's a weird idea. But it made an impact on me. And it reassured me. The words on this card, it says, the Lord has done great things for us, and we are filled with joy. Psalm 126:3. I'm praying for you, Abby. Love, Elizabeth. And the words on this card reassured me that group that had been praying for our clinic, that group that had been praying for us, that was a safe place to go. They were safe. And I wasn't sure of that. But when I saw that card, I knew that it was a chance that I had to take. And I walked into that center, I walked into the Coalition for Life that day, and you know, after I picked them all up off the floor from fainting, they didn't have to help me. They didn't have to forgive me. They didn't have to reach out to me in the way that they did. I mean, I had been their opponent for 8 years, big time. I was against them in the media. I had said terrible things about them. publicly. I mean, I was terrible. I don't think I ever cussed him out or anything. I wasn't that bad. But, I mean, I was their opponent. I was there to discredit them every day for 8 years. And I did a pretty darn good job at it. But they didn't care. When I showed up at their door that day, all of that was gone. It was all forgiven. And you know what? It has never, ever come up. It's gone. They never say, remember that time when you came out to the fence and... Never. They never talk about it. And sometimes I think, one time I said, you know, I apologize. I said, you know, I sat him down individually and I said, I just want to say I'm sorry. I feel like I have to apologize for how nasty I was to this group and you individually. I don't remember if I did anything terrible individually, but I feel like I have to apologize. And every single one of them looked at me and they said, you don't have to apologize. You are forgiven. Anything that you have done has been wiped away. That is the most Christ-like thing and the most Christ-like attitude that anybody in this movement could have. And that's how we should strive to be. Every day. No condemnation. No judgment. When we go out to those clinics, it is about love. It is not about judging women that go in there or trying to figure out why they're going in there or trying to dissect what they're doing or dissect why they're cussing us out. Every single person that goes in there is hurting. And that includes the workers. It includes the workers. It includes the volunteers. Oh, Ann, you're so good. Everybody that walks in there needs a Christ-like witness from us. And we better be there to give it to them. Being outside of a clinic and praying outside of a clinic is the most important thing you will ever do in the pro-life movement. In my opinion. I'm going to say that again. Being outside of an abortion clinic where women are going in to take the lives of their children, being out there and being a witness for Christ is the most important thing you will ever do in the pro-life movement. Is it comfortable to be out there? No. Is it scary? Yeah. But you better do it anyway. You better go out there and do it anyway. We make up so many excuses for why we don't have time to go out to the clinic. I don't think any of those fly whenever we go to God. I don't think they fly. We make time for everything else when it comes to what we want. we go and, I mean, look, I go and get my pedicures. I get my nails done. I obviously get my hair done. I go and get all that done. But you know what? I spend hours every week outside of a clinic praying. I make the sacrifices necessary to go out there and be a witness for Christ. Because if we're not out there, there is no hope. There is no hope for those women going in. There's no hope for the workers. We're it. We're all they've got. That's it. And you don't have to go out there and talk. In fact, don't talk. If you don't know what to say, don't talk. Please. Because bad sidewalk counseling is the worst. Okay? So,
hands clapping.
So don't talk. Okay? Your presence makes a difference. Your prayers make a difference. Did you know that the average abortion rate, no-show rate, in this country is 50%? But it is drastically higher the more people that are out there praying in front of a clinic. That makes sense, right? I mean, of course, the power of prayer. I mean, yes, that makes sense, but also, you got a big mass of people out there. Do you want to drive in there? Do you think that's going to be comfortable? No. And we'll do whatever it takes to keep them out, right? If it's because they feel uncomfortable, fine. Keep driving. Keep thinking about your decision. The longer a woman waits, the longer a woman thinks about her decision, the less likely it is that she's going to choose abortion. I mean, that's just the facts. Women that would call the clinic and let's say they were going to be, 9 weeks on the day that they had their appointment, but for some reason they couldn't get a ride. And so they would have to reschedule for another 2 weeks. They never came back. Give them some time and they'll choose life. That's why Planned Parenthood hates waiting periods. They don't want women to think about their decision. They want women to have a pregnancy test, come in the same day, and have an abortion. Don't think about the decision that you're going to make. I mean, that's why they don't want them. That's why they don't want ultrasound legislation. We don't want you to see the baby that's inside of you. We don't want you to know what's taking place. We don't want you to have informed consent. Let me tell you something. Planned Parenthood has kind of traded this motto, I trust women. I trust women too. I trust them to be able to look at all of the information about abortion and know that that's not the best choice for them. I trust women to be smart enough. I trust women to be smart enough to say, I've had an unplanned pregnancy, and you know what? I'm a strong enough woman to be able to handle it. Abortion is not the best option for me. I do trust women. I trust women to have all the facts. I trust women to make an informed decision. But you know what? They don't get an informed decision at Planned Parenthood. And they won't get it if they don't stop at a pregnancy center first. If they don't go to a pro-life doctor first. And the honest truth is, most women who find themselves in a crisis pregnancy, they're not stopping there first. They're going straight to Planned Parenthood. That's why we have to be out there. We have to be that last glimmer of hope for them and their baby and the father involved and the rest of their family. Because abortion just does not just affect the woman. It does not just affect the unborn child. It affects families. The hardest thing I've ever had to do was look my parents in the face and tell them that I have aborted two of their grandchildren. It affects families.
Who knows who is not here because of abortion? In fact, I'm part of a board right now, Heroic Media. We're putting up a billboard. We're putting up 37 billboards in Chicago. And on all 37 of those billboards is a picture of Obama. And the text next to it says, every 24 seconds, a future leader in this country is aborted. You think that'll stir up some controversy? You bet it will, and we hope it will. We want it to stir up controversy. People need to be involved in this movement. Everybody needs to be involved in this movement, because the honest truth is that there is a place for every single person in the pro-life movement. My four-year-old daughter goes out to the clinic with me and prays. It doesn't matter how young you are. It doesn't matter how wise you are. It doesn't matter. There is a place for you in this movement. Every single person. And the bottom line is that the majority of people that need to get involved in this movement aren't. The people that Planned Parenthood are targeting, they're not involved. Planned Parenthood targets some of our most vulnerable individuals, the unborn, minorities. Well, Planned Parenthood targets unborn and minorities. But the other group of people that are most vulnerable in our country are the elderly. Planned Parenthood targets the unborn and minorities. Where are the minorities? Well, we got Star back there. What up, Star? Representing. But they're not here. We need to be doing a better job. We need to be reaching out to those people who are not here but are being targeted. The African-American population, for the first time in the history of the United States, is in a state of decline because of abortion. Why aren't they here? Where are they? They're being aborted by the thousands, the hundreds of thousands, every single year. They're not here. They're not here to support their own culture. They're not here to take a stand against what is happening to their own race. We've got to do better. We've got to go to those places that make us uncomfortable. We've got to reach out to people that we have never reached out to before. We have got to get uncomfortable. That includes talking to people we've never talked to before. And my friends, it includes going out to the abortion clinics. It includes going to the places where abortions are taking place. With 1 in 3 women having abortions in this country, we can no longer sit in our comfort zone. We can no longer be comfortable. We can no longer be lazy pro-lifers or be complacent. It is time to get active, and there is a place for every single one of you. Thank you so much for having me tonight, or this morning. I don't even know what day is. Monday? I don't know. Thank you so much for having me. Thank you for your willingness to accept me into this movement. And I look forward to talking to each and every one of you and meeting with each and every one of you. And go get uncomfortable. Thank you.
Don't forget your note.
Okay.
Okay, we have about 8 minutes for Q&A. And for those of you just arriving today, here's the protocol also for all the sessions with question and answer. We just ask you to raise your hand, and there's a very handsome gentleman here in the suit. And your name is, sir?
Jason.
Let's say hi to Jason. Hi, Jason. Okay. So Jason will walk up to you with the microphone because this is being recorded, so it's important that we get your question. So go to the first person with a question. Oh, we have Colton. Hi, Colton. Say hi, Colton.
Hi, Colton.
Hi, Colton. Okay. Take it away, gentlemen.
First question, raise your hand, and we'll bring the microphone to you.
Have regret after your abortions, and what do you think about that? Because there's a study out that says that women don't regret their abortions.
You know, after I had my first abortion, I felt nothing at all. I had a surgical abortion. I felt nothing at all. I felt really relieved that it was over with. My second abortion, I had a medication abortion. It was very traumatic for me. I had terrible medical complications. You know, every adverse event that could happen happened to me. And so it was really bad. But so then I was like, oh, I'm just against medication abortion, right? So I'm just for surgical abortion. And it wasn't really until, you know, I remember opening my chart when I went to work for Planned Parenthood. I found my chart at the clinic, and I opened it up, and that was the first time I had seen the ultrasound of my own child. And I opened that up, and I remember looking at it and thinking, you know, I shouldn't feel bad about this. But feeling regret, but feeling guilty that I felt regret. Does that make sense? Because I'm pro-choice, right? So I don't believe in that. I don't believe in feeling guilty for abortions. I don't believe in feeling regret after an abortion. But feeling regret, you know, looking at my child on this ultrasound, knowing that I had taken the life of my child, and I just quickly put it back in the file. I never looked at it again. And so I think that, you know, there was an internal struggle there after seeing that ultrasound picture. But then, you know, I went on, you know, while I worked at Planned Parenthood, openly sharing about my abortions with women that came into the clinic. They would always ask, have you had an abortion? You know, looking for some affirmation. You know, and I would share about my abortions with them and always tell them they should not have a medication abortion. But it wasn't really until I left Planned Parenthood, and, you know, a couple weeks later, it wasn't really until I went out to the clinic for the first time to pray. That was really when I started the real healing process for me, because I had to face my sin. I had to face everything that I had done, and that was, it was very healing for me. It was very sad, but it was very, and I think that's when the healing began.
Hi, Abby. I want to just tell you, as I read your book, what was really moving to me was the goodwill that you expressed, that you yourself as a person committed to women's health and that many of your workers felt. I never had that perspective of Planned Parenthood. I just thought people were kind of in it. I don't know what I thought, but I had made my own misjudgments. But I was impressed by that, and it gave me another perspective to think about really responding with love mm-hmm. as we stand at these vigils and pray. The other thing, though, I really want to tell you is I commend your work, and I thank you, because I think that what you have gone through speaks to a lot of women in a lot of different ways, and the humility and the courage that it took to stand here to write the book is amazing, and that is witnessing to Christ, and I thank you for that as well.
Thank you.
Hi. Thanks so much for your witness. I have a question. In your book, in the beginning, you talked about that when you were first talking to Jill, you didn't know that many of the pro-lifers also did not believe in birth control.
Mm-hmm.
So my question to you now is, how have your views on contraception changed?
Okay, that's a good question. Okay, so That's actually a funny story. Okay, so when I left Planned Parenthood, I sat very boldly in the Coalition for Life office and said, I will never change my views on contraception. I will always believe in contraception. So don't even try to change my mind. Okay? And they said, okay. That's okay. You know, we don't have to agree on everything, you know, but we still want to help you. So I was an IUD user. I had a Mirena. I was a perfect IUD user. I loved it. I could have been the poster child for it. And I was sitting in mass one day, still loving my IUD, and I'm sitting there, and I'm you know, sitting there with my husband, and I thought people that used NFP were loons. Okay. I was like, oh yeah, I see how NFP works. You all have 10 kids. Okay. And so I'm sitting there and I'm like sitting in mass and I'm looking at this woman who I don't know and she's holding this little baby. And I'm telling you, when God convicts me of something, it is like him hitting me over the head with a brick. Okay. And I'm sitting there in mass and I'm going, I have to get this IUD out. And I look over at my husband and I go, I have to get my IUD out. And my husband, who now thinks I'm totally bonkers, he looks at me and he goes, now? And I was like, well, no, not now, but, I mean, tomorrow. And he said, but I didn't think we were ready to have kids. And I said, oh, yeah, I know, but we'll use that NFP thing. And he goes, okay. And so the next day I called my doctor and I said, I talked to his nurse and I said, I've got to get this IUD out. And she said, okay, we can get you in on Thursday. And I said, no, it's going to come out today. So either you're going to take it out or I'm going to take it out. So one way or the other, it's coming out. And she was like, don't touch it. She was like, come in at 1. And so I went in. I got the IUD taken out. My doctor said, well, what are you going to use for contraception? I said, I don't know, that NFP thing. And she said, okay, well, I don't really know what to tell you about that. And I said, oh, it's okay. I'm going to get a book. And so we had no idea what we were doing. We did get a book, and we went to classes. And anyway, it was just like that. I mean, it was like my idea of contraception totally changed. I went to a talk with – I went actually on a retreat with Janet Smith. And it was totally amazing, and it was just like that. I mean, it was just all of a sudden, I mean, it was like, okay, I don't believe in contraception anymore, and I'm on NFP. I don't really know what I'm doing, though. And it was really cool, but it was just like that. So I had to eat my words again. I do that often.
One more question.
Hi, Abby. I just want to say thank you so much for the speech you gave. I know this question was asked yesterday at Father Frank Pavone's speech, but I was wondering, what do you think the most effective sign is to be held outside an abortion clinic?
You know, I think that our signs generally should be very minimal, whatever we have outside of the clinics, because I don't think it should look like, you know, Lollapalooza out there with just a ton of signs and cluttered. I think the most effective thing that we do out there is you know, witness with our prayer, and then effective sidewalk counseling. But I think that there are two very effective signs. One is I always encourage vigils to have a sign that says, ask to see your ultrasound. And then I always encourage vigils to have a sign that says, please pray, abortions are happening today. And that gets the community involved and, you know, helps. I mean, a lot of people don't even know abortions are taking place in their community. And so they see people out there and like, what is this about? You know, and we had women that would come into our clinic all the time. I mean, probably half of the women that came in for appointments, and they would say, I don't even know why these people are out there. I mean, it's not like y'all do abortions. And I'm like, Yeah, we do. I mean, so a lot of the people that go to Planned Parenthood don't even know that that is an abortion clinic. And so having a sign that says, you know, please pray, abortion's happening here today, abortion's, you know, taking place here today, making the community aware and holding that sign out there when you're out there is very, very powerful. And it gets the community involved. It gets the community active in praying for the women in there. And I think, you know, saying ask to see your ultrasound is very, very powerful because Planned Parenthood doesn't want them to see their ultrasound, doesn't want them to see what's taking place inside of their own body. Thank you.